Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, the occult and witches.
It can turn deadly. We have a number of cases where young people get into this, and the next thing you know, they're out killing people. All of our modern cookbooks basically evolve out of these occult witches spell books. This has got to be part of a much wider conspiracy of people doing terrible things. And the next thing you know, you have, researchers, journalists who are taking every single weird murder case and looking, oh, they were part of this grand conspiracy.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. So our first guest studies the occult, its history, its influence, and where it's going. This is occult historian Dr. Brian Regal. What is the occult? Like, what makes something of the occult versus not of the occult?
Well, that's not an easy question to answer. The word occult simply means hidden. Everybody thinks it has some sort of mystical, magical meaning to it, but it just simply means something that's not hidden or is hidden. If you consider religion an occult practice, then there's tons of it. But most religions have sort of aspects to them, belief systems to them that we could call a cult. They, of course, would get very upset if you say it's a cult. If I just say without any details, here's an organization that venerates a dead person who was killed and came back to life, and then we venerate all these other people who died, and we can talk to them, and if you talk to them in just the right way, they will then go to the great deity and will bring your ideas to the great deity. And everybody, was, oh yeah, okay, that sounds like the occult. And then I said, well, that's Christianity. Oh no, that's not the occult. So it all depends upon kind of our position here. Now, in the Americas, in North America, you don't really get the embracing of this thing we vaguely call the occult in a way that happens in other places. The thing, the sort of occult practice that catches on first in what is then known as British North America is astrology. Astrology comes over with those early settlers, early immigrants. One of the things that it gets involved in back in Europe is medical astrology. You go to a doctor, the first thing they ask you is, what's your birthday? And then they cast your horoscope. And by casting your horoscope, this is a little convoluted, so you got to stick with me. By casting your horoscope, they can figure out what's wrong with you and how to fix it. And the fixing didn't involve like blood transfusions or anything like that. It involved figuring out the right crystal talisman to give you to wear. Because illness was seen as something that came from the spheres, that is outside the earth. And these emanations came down to the earth and got into you, got into me, gets into everybody. And if you get bad emanations, that's what makes you sick. So the medical astrologer would try to figure out, what's your star sign, all that sort of thing. And you sort of do this sort of algorithm, as it were, and you come up with, bing, okay, you should be carrying a piece of turquoise. And that would, theoretically at least, prevent the bad emanations from reaching you. So you could block the bad emanations through the use of astrology, and conversely, you could bring in the good emanations to make you healthy and keep you healthy. And so that sort of thing continues to this day. I mean, crystal healing is still a thing.
What would you say kind of, so we have astrology. What would you say is kind of the next big occult practice or idea or whatever you want to call it that kind of comes into society?
I would argue that that's spiritualism. Spiritualism hits here in the U.S., the U.S. by now, in the 1840s. In Hydesville, New York, we can actually find a spot. This is where it begins. And with the Fox family, the Fox sisters. There's three Fox sisters, and they live in this tiny little house, in Hydesville, New York, upstate New York. And the sisters live in a tiny little house with one main floor, really just a big room, and then like an attic space. And the sisters live in the attic space. And the dad starts getting upset because in the middle of the night, he starts hearing these sort of like knocking on wood sounds. And he climbs up the ladder and he looks and they're asleep. So he goes back down next night, knocking wood sounds, climbs back. What's going on? Nothing. So finally, he confronts his daughters. Why are you making those banging sounds at night? You're keeping me and your mother up. We're not doing that. That's being done by Mr. Splitfoot. And so it turns out that they think they have contacted a spirit. Now, who might Mr. Splitfoot be?
I have no idea.
The devil.
Oh, the cloven hooves, the cloven hooves.
People start freaking out because, you know, these wacky Hyde sisters, they're talking to the devil. Because eventually what happens is they say, well, Mr. Splitfoot talks to us by making rapping sounds. And we figured out how to make rapping sounds back to speak to him. And this spreads like wildfire. Local pastor comes over, you know, and the Fox house is haunted. But they start getting followers, and people start saying, "Wait a minute! If you can do this, can you teach me how to do it? I want to contact my dead relative." And so they start say, "Oh yeah, okay. Well, you just do this and you do that, and you work out a code system, and you can talk to your dead relatives." And it becomes hugely popular. And eventually, years later, the Fox sisters will admit they were just making the whole thing up. You know, they weren't actually talking to a spirit. But by then, it doesn't matter. The genie's out of the bottle. This becomes a huge thing. It's very popular throughout America. And you even get practitioners, mediums, that tour. They actually go on like a rock and roll band touring. And so these traveling seance people, mediums, start making tons of money. There's an example, a woman named Cora Scott Hatch, very attractive, very comely, and she starts doing this, and she is hugely popular. Because you take this ability to talk to spirits and stick it in a hot babe, and, you know, all bets are off. You have this spread of spiritualism. And one of the things that comes out of that is the Ouija board. Astrology and spiritualism, they're sort of the high-end occult practices. But then you have a lot of these little people running around, individual people, who never get famous, we never know who they are, but they're running around doing occult things, in particular stuff like divination, and dowsing. Dowsing's another very popular in colonial America, early America. Dowsing is this idea that if you as an individual, if you are attuned to the spirit world, you can take a stick, and if you hold it in just the right way and you walk around, you can find water. You have witchcraft, which also is extremely difficult to define. You have witches. You don't have huge numbers of witches, like supposedly there were in Europe. We do have the infamous witch trials, the witch craze of the 1700s going on up around Boston. But the issue there is, as far as we know, none of the people who were put on trial for witchcraft were actually witches.
They weren't witches in the sense that, like, no, they weren't witches, or like they weren't even claiming to be witches.
Right. They weren't even claiming. So any sort of folk medicine, folk practice was automatically labeled witchcraft. So if you, again, remember that this is a time in American history where people don't live in cities. There's very few doctors around. There are no medical schools in the U.S. at this time. So if you wanted to really become a doctor and go to medical school, you had to go overseas. So most doctors in North America were self-taught. Women mostly, because this seems to have been mostly a women's profession, if you will. And they start writing this stuff down. And so they start creating what we call today spell books. Back then they were called grimoire. You have to say it with an outrageous French accent. And these books, they would write stuff down, and this is how you take care of this. Oh, and this is how you make a really delicious cake. And so you start to get these spell books that are part occult medicine, part astrology, part cookbook. All of our modern cookbooks basically evolve out of these occult witches' spell books. And we don't think of a cookbook today as a, you know, as some sort of sorcery, but that's where it all comes from. And so it's in that way that occult practice spreads throughout U.S. culture. But the witch trials in the 1790s in Boston are not really, I'm sorry, 1760s, are not really about witches. It's about stealing land. Because if you don't like your neighbor, right, and your neighbor has a nice piece of land and you want to buy it and your neighbor won't sell it to you, all you got to do is go to the authorities and say, my neighbor's a witch. I've seen him flying around on a broom. They get arrested. They get put in jail. They get put on trial. And even if they don't get executed by the state, by the time they come back, you have bought their land. So by making accusations, you get, it's no different today than accusing someone of being woke. It's not about the stuff. It's about labeling someone you don't like as a bad person. But luckily, the witch craze here in America doesn't really reach the kind of homicidal, genocidal levels it does in Europe. Hundreds of thousands of people are executed in Europe for being witches. And werewolves, too. Most people don't realize there were actually werewolf trials in medieval and early modern Europe. Now, jump forward. Throughout most of the 19th century, occult practices were done very privately. But into the 20th century, especially post-World War II, you start to get a kind of resurgence, particularly in California. You have Anton LaVey, who is the guy who creates the Church of Satan, the modern Church of Satan. And he's a great self-promoter, and he's in California, and this is the 1960s, and he had the love movement, and people are running around. They want to experiment with new things. Drug use is on the rise. And so he starts this thing that becomes very popular because people think, oh, excuse me, this is a way I can show rebellion. I'll be a Satan worshiper. The problem is Anton LaVey and his people, they don't really think Satan is real. To them, Satan or the devil, whatever you want to call it, is a metaphor for rebellion against conformity, as a way of expanding your consciousness. But people who don't understand that, they think they're really actually
worshipping Satan, you know, yeah.
Worshipping the devil. What most people today, most people, what they think is the occult isn't really. They've gained most of our modern understanding, or thought to be understanding, of occult practices, of witchcraft, devil worship, is all from the movies.
Yeah, that's what kind of the impression that I got, right, was a lot of this stuff is more a creation of the media than what is actually being practiced.
Right, of course.
What would you say that occultism kind of in practice, like, what does that look like today?
Well, it doesn't really look like most people think it does. They're not sacrificing virgins on an altar, you know, in some hidden dungeon. The vast majority of occult practitioners today, you wouldn't even recognize them because they look like everybody else. There's a lot of spirit belief that you can achieve a kind of oneness with the universe by chanting certain prayers. And again, the crystal healing thing is a major holdover from those early days. And so that's why if you go into, you know, a witch store, what are they selling mostly in the window? Crystals. Because it's still believed that the crystal can be something to sort of focus energy, pull in the good emanations, chase the bad emanations away. Today's modern occult practitioners don't really fit the stereotype, the movie TV stereotype. And anybody who does is faking.
Yeah, they're putting on an act, right? Like it's more for the attention aspect of it.
Right. That's why you get these groups, you know, they're usually teenagers who started, you know, oh, we're going to become Satan worshipers, and we found an old house somewhere in the woods, and we're going to go in there, we're going to paint pentagrams on the wall and do all this stuff. And it's about self-empowerment. The people who often do that fake sort of Satanist witchcraft stuff, they're people who feel they have no power in the world. How do I get it? If I worship Satan, I can get power. If I become a witch, I can get power. Real witches don't do that, you know, because that's not what they're about. And the problem with that is, unfortunately, like, we can sit here and sort of laugh at it a little bit. Oh, Satan worshiper, you know, tell Satan I said hi next time you're talking to him. It can turn deadly. We have a number of cases where young people get into this, and the next thing you know, they're out killing people because, well, Satan wanted me to do this. If you remember some years ago, there was the infamous Son of Sam.
Yeah, yeah, New York. Right.
And they catch the guy, and, oh, I was talking to a dog, and, you know, I'm a Satanist, I'm doing all this stuff. It turns out, you know, people looked at this and they said, oh my God, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There are these satanic groups. We even call it the Satanic Panic. It happens here in America, and it happens in England as well. This has got to be part of a much wider conspiracy of people doing terrible things. And the next thing you know, you have, you know, researchers, journalists who are taking every single weird murder case and looking, oh, they were part of this grand conspiracy. You know, Charles Manson's part of this thing. And, you know, every weird, disturbing murder they can find, they somehow hook it up to this.
Why do you think, though, that some things, right, okay, even if it kind of sounds like a very similar thing between the occult and religion, why do some things get classified as the occult and some things get classified as religion?
Because we do religion, you do the occult.
It's that simple, right? It's not who's doing it. It's not what they're doing. It's who's doing it.
If we do it, it's okay. If they do it, it's wrong.
is there any kind of fundamental difference that you would say, okay, these two things seem the same on the surface, but underneath there is something that people just feel differently about?
You know, I'm a historian. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't really have the training or the skills to really explain that. But take any religion, take the names off of it, and just say, here's the fundamental structure of what this religion does. And compare it to, you know, compare them. You can't tell the difference between, you know, even a mainstream religion and the occult practice, witchcraft practice. It's all fundamentally the same. The practitioners are trying to gain some connection to the divine. One of the things you notice about religions in general, whether it's the Western Abrahamic religions, you know, Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, or Eastern religions like Buddhism or Hinduism or Shintoism or Jainism, it's all about knowing that we humans are, until we meet real space aliens, and we haven't yet. Sorry, I had to break that to you, but there's no evidence space aliens have ever come here. That doesn't mean they're not out there. They just haven't come here. And until we find out that there are really space aliens, we're it. And we humans are the worst creatures in the universe. And when we're not doing horrible things, we're trying to figure out how to clean ourselves up so that we can contact the divine. That's what most religions are about. That's what witchcraft is about. And, you know, we want to somehow shed this horrible, awful, mortal life of ours and find something better in the spirit world, in heaven, in nirvana, you know, wherever you think the place to be is. That's what we're trying to do. And they all basically take the same approach. Clean yourself up, get right with the spirit world, and you get to go to heaven or whatever.
I think it would be really difficult to explain to somebody what's the difference between a spell and a prayer.
Right.
I guess, is it more based on, right, like I always kind of go back to the metaphor of high school, right? Like the cool kids in high school are religious and the weird kids are occult.
There you go.
Is it that simple?
I think it is. You know, it's that stupidly, idiotically simple.
If one is the lowest and 10 is the highest, what do you think is like the influence of the occult on American society? Like, where would you put it on that scale?
I'd say 5 or 6.
Is there any evidence, though, that following the occult path takes people to a place that following the religious path does not?
I don't think so.
I would say mainstream religions, at least, like I was raised in a mainstream religion, but there's a hope there. Is there the same kind of hope in occult practices?
Yeah, I think there is. That's why they do it.
It really isn't any different then.
I don't think so. I mean, there's probably a lot of very devout religionists listening to this right now, screaming at me on their computer. But I study this stuff for a living, and I teach this stuff for a living. And again, I would love to be able to say, look, don't worry. When, no matter what happens in this life, when you die, if you've been a good person, you'll get to go to this nice place, or you'll see these people that in your life that you loved, that you've lost, you'll be able to see them again. I have no evidence that happens. I wish it did. I would be so happy if when I die, I open my eyes and there's all these people. I would love for that to happen. The spiritual is called it Summerland. That's where all the spirits were. And you could go to Summerland because it was always nice. The weather was always nice. Yeah. Everybody was dressed in like bitchin' Victorian outfits, you know. And you could speak to Ben Franklin, or you could speak to George Washington, or you could speak to Siddhartha, or you could meet Jesus. And you'd have these sort of endless garden parties where you could sit. The weather was always wonderful and everybody's in great outfits. It would be great that that was a real thing. I just don't think there is.
I hope that's what I would hope, right? Like if something happens and whatever it is, it's like, I just hope whoever's like, you want to go again? Like, yeah, I'll go again. Let's try this.
Well, you know, Hindus and Buddhists believe in reincarnation. Yeah, because they believe that you are so awful. You're such a filthy human being that you can't clean yourself up in just one lifetime.
Why don't we all?
So you need multiple lifetimes. The Western Abrahamic religion, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, their thinking is very linear. You have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that's it. If you can find, you get one shot at finding salvation. If you don't get it, you're done. But many polytheistic religions like Hinduism or Buddhism, they recognize that human beings are awful and you can't achieve this thing in one lifetime. And so you get a bunch of goes at it.
What's the reason, though, that we always have to be awful? Like, are there any occult practices where, like, you know what, maybe we're not that bad?
Well, that's a, you know, that's a great philosophical issue. I can use the example in the Western experience. We have this thing that we call the Enlightenment. This period, sort of like the middle of the 1600s through about, you know, 1800 or so. And you get all these famous philosophers. All those guys, they make you read in, you know, in intro to philosophy in college. And you have these two guys. You have John Locke and you have Thomas Hobbes. And they're often held up as kind of the poster children for this question. Locke said, human beings are born basically good. And if people are left to them their own devices, they will behave well. Hobbes said, no. People are basically awful. And they will stab you, shoot you, rob you. They will kill their mothers for 50 cents. And so Locke said, well, we should have less government because people are adult enough to live their lives in a decent way. And Hobbes said, no, we have to have a Leviathan, a huge government that forces you to be good with the threat of punishment. Whether it's, you know, Baal or Santa Lucia, and they will sort of fix me. You know, they'll take my problems to a sort of a higher authority, and then everything will get... I don't see a difference between that. The idea is the same. The end game is the same.
Why do you think then some people have such a harsh reaction to it, right? Like, you're doing what? You know, they get... you right? Like, why do you think that there is such a reaction, even though these two concepts may be pretty similar?
Because what I do is okay, what you do is wrong.
Kind of looking back at some of the more, like, I guess, historical or societal or whatever kind of definitions you want to give on that one, like, are there some occult ideas that have kind of crept into the mainstream? Like, you would say, like, oh, that's kind of an occult idea that is now more in the mainstream society.
Well, astrology is the easy example of that. Spirit mediums are still everywhere. You know, you can go to a spirit medium and they'll cast your horoscope. And
has it crept into, like, government at all?
Well, Ronald Reagan had a personal astrologer.
Yeah, that's pretty high up there, right? When you got the president of the United States,
you can't get much higher than president of the United States. And so, if the president can believe in this, I'm willing to bet. I don't have any evidence. I can't say a name, only because I don't know. But I would not be surprised if we find out that there's a number of current elected officials in our government who believe this stuff is real.
Do you have some time for some listener submitted questions?
Sure.
Most unique occult concept. Like, oh, that's an occult practice that is pretty different from anything else.
I can't think of anything that's, like, really, you know, this... the mainstream of Wicca, let's say, they do this, and then you have this little offshoot that does something very different. I can't think of anything like that.
is there anything even kind of close to it? We're like, oh, that's a little different.
Yeah, and like I said before, most practices that the average person thinks, oh, that's a witchcraft thing or that's a Satan thing or whatever, aren't really a thing. Because it comes out of, they're all ideas invented for movies and TV.
That leads us into the next question. Like, movie with the best movie or TV show with the best depiction of the occult, movie or TV show with the worst depiction?
I might fall back on an Old Faithful and mention The Exorcist, but I'm not sure if that's really an occult movie, as it were. Because the Catholic Church believes that people can get taken over by evil spirits. But I don't think there's really, maybe the viewers would know this better, I don't think there's really a movie or a TV show that a practicing witch would look at and say, wow, that's really like what I do. And I think that's because the reality is most witchcraft is kind of boring.
This one just, I don't know if this is a thing, like, it just says, what's up with the dollar bill? You hate this question, right? You hate this question so much.
Oh, it makes me crazy. The minute I hear the name Freemason or Illuminati, I just want to kill the person who's asking me the question. The founding fathers, man, they were all Masons, man. They were in the Illuminati, man. The Illuminati controls the world. The reason why, this is a pet peeve for me. The reason why Ben Franklin and George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and all those guys, all the guys we call the founding fathers, the reason they were Freemasons is because when modern masonry is put together, because people are always trying to connect this somehow to ancient Egypt. But modern masonry begins as a reaction against monarchy and against government repression. Because remember, until the U.S. is created, every country in the world is some kind of monarchy. And the people who start Freemasonry or the Illuminati, and the reason why they start as secret societies is because if you're in early modern France and you have a monarchy that is using the police, using the military to crack down on anybody who gets even a whiff of anti-monarchy, they send the troops in. So you're not going to want to discuss this stuff out in the open. You want to discuss it with like-minded people who you know won't rat you out to the authorities. And so both the Masons and the Illuminati start as these kind of pro-democracy, pro-freedom organizations that we have to keep it secret, but while it's secret, we're going to work to try to put together political structures that will help us get rid of the monarchy and bring in freedom and democracy and all those things we like. That's why the founding fathers are all into this, because what's the revolution? American Revolution is all about, kicking out the British Empire, kicking out the monarchy. And so you wouldn't say that out loud in the open because you would never know who's listening. And so they create these things as secret societies. And the dollar bill, the dollar bill we know and love today, is a modern institution. It's basically a 20th century invention. And so you have all these people running around who want to tell you about, oh man, there's all this stuff. It's secret coded stuff in the dollar bill, man. If you fold a dollar bill up just the right way, it shows Solomon's temple, and that's where the Ark of the Covenant was, and it makes you crazy because it's all nonsense.
That's exactly what the Illuminati wants you to think, though, isn't it?
You cracked it, dude.
Can't fool me.
I'm no sheeple.
It's kind of the last question we got, but basically, like, where do you think that the occult goes from here? Does it fundamentally change? Does it, like, start incorporating robots and AI? Or is it same thing?
I don't know. My late partner, she was also a historian. Her area of especially was the history of robotics. And within the world of robotics, there's this concept of the singularity. And the singularity is the idea that the way technology is progressing, it will get to a point in the not that distant future where we can take, depending upon who you talk to about this, take your brain and stick it in a robot. And so who you are as an individual, as a person, will be in this machine. And so the machine will last, and if the machine breaks down, you can change parts and things. But humans and machines will essentially kind of merge together. And there are some roboticists who think this is a real thing or can be a real thing. There are some who say, no, that's crazy. You know, you're never going to really be able to do that. But that might be the next phase of this.
Is the practice of the occult, would you say that is more popular now than it has been in years past? Going up, going down, staying the same?
It's probably staying the same. You know, it sort of has a level. Sometimes it goes up a little bit, sometimes it goes down a little bit. And I was just going to say, you know, I know I'm not an occult practitioner. I'm not a witch. I'm not a sorcerer of any kind. But I've known and still know some people who actively engage in this behavior. And of all the people I know, they're the nicest.
At what time period would you say that the occult was biggest in, like, countries where it is the biggest?
Since the fall of communism, for example. I think sort of occult ideas are seeing a little bit of a resurgence in Russia and some of the Slavic countries. In Africa, there's been this kind of surge throughout the 20th century, and unfortunately has taken on some really awful aspects. Several years ago, there were a series of murders in Africa of albino people, because the idea spread that albino people are somehow, you know, wizards and sorcerers. And so these poor people are, you know, being chased around, hacked to death because of some idiotic belief system that isn't, you know, that doesn't mean anything. And so there are places like that around. I think probably that kind of stuff currently sees most of its popularity in Africa. And it, you know, it's like the teenagers getting into Satanism. They have no power. They've been, you know, spit on their whole lives. Here's a way I can gain some little bit of power for myself. And I think that's a similar thing going on in places in Africa. Not everywhere, but there are these kind of pockets where people have come to believe these things that, you know, okay, if you believe in Bigfoot, I don't believe in Bigfoot. I wrote a book about Bigfoot. There's no Bigfoot. But if you believe in Bigfoot, so what? You know, it's not the end of the world. But there are some of these practices, some of these occult practices that lead to violence, lead to homicide, in no greater numbers, no greater numbers than Christianity does, or Islam does, or Hinduism does. But we tend to focus on, when the guy walks into a Burger King and shoots everybody with a machine gun and says, Jesus told me to do this, that's horrible and it's awful. But if somebody walked in and did the same thing and said, the devil made me do this, I'm a Satan worshiper, that's going to get all the headlines.
Is there anything that we kind of think that we missed, or what's kind of coming up next for you if people want to learn more?
Well, you can go to my webpage. Just Google my name. You'll get my Kane University webpage. You can see the classes I teach. You can see the books I've written, the book that I just had come out is about myths and legends about who, you know, really discovered America. And there's a lot of wacky occult stuff in there. And, you know, I've written books on Bigfoot and on the Jersey Devil and an encyclopedia of pseudoscience, which has got a lot of occult stuff in it. And you can read my, I've done, over the years, a bunch of op-ed pieces on various different topics and articles that you can download for free. There's an article in there that I wrote a few years ago about werewolves, which caused the werewolf community of Brooklyn to threaten me.
You gotta watch it. Like, even if it's...
That gives you a little inside view of my life.
Wait, who? What's the occult thing about who discovered America?
There are people who believe that that witches came to America before Columbus, that ancient Greek cult practitioners found their way here, all before Columbus. These are all stories about people who came to America before Columbus. And Carthaginians who came to Oklahoma, you know, and that there's evidence there, and that Vikings came here. Not the Vikings that we know came here, because there were Vikings who did come here up in Nova Scotia. But there are sort of the other Viking belief system about, you know, Leif Erikson and his homicidal sister Freydis, who goes around hacking people up with an axe. And, you know, so there's some interesting stuff there. Columbus even said he saw manatees that talked. Leif Erikson said there are these creatures out of European tradition called the Skipodii. These are people with one giant foot instead of two little feet.
Yeah.
One huge, and they hop around. And Leif Erikson, according to the Vinland sagas, he saw one of these things hopping around, you know, New England somewhere. And so, you know, the focus of my work is on the relationship between amateur speculators and professional scholars. And so there's tons of that in the American discovery myths.
I want to thank Dr. Riegel so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media sites. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And we've also included his information in the episode description. The YouTube version of this interview will be live on October 12th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific. Okay, now let's bring in John Shull and get to the pointless part of the show. So if you had your wish, like, what do you hope happens after you die?
Oh, I mean, what I want to have happen is everything that I didn't have in reality, I would want in the afterlife.
That's it?
That's it. I mean, but I'd have to see what's happening, like, if I died, right? Like, I wouldn't want to make that determination until I found out what the afterlife was going to be like. It is, you know, it is scary to think about, though, however, like, what if you do pass on and it's just your soul? Like, that's it. Like, you're not even you. You're just like this floating ball of you. Like, it is kind of interesting to think about what really happens when you do pass on.
What if you're just stuck in the coffin forever? That'd be terrible,
oh,
man.
God, like, dude.
That'd be the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously, eventually you... Well, I guess if you're already dead, then you're just... No, that sounds terrible.
That'd be the worst thing, right? That would be the worst thing, just to be there forever.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I just immediately started just wanting to eat fruit now and go work out tonight. So thank you.
Yeah, you got to delay that as long as possible. Right?
But I'm also, you know, I try to be a realist, and there probably isn't anything when you pass on, right? There's probably not a whole lot But like, what does happen? It's an incredible question, but I fail to see the light, so to speak. I don't know if there is something beyond just death.
The only thing that I would really want, besides like the ability to see my friends and family again, I would like a review of my life. Like, oh, if you would have made this decision here, you could have done this. Or if you would have made this decision here, you would have been here. Like a post-mortem of my own life where we just go over like all of the different things that could have happened to me.
I mean, I guess it all goes into the, do you believe in, is fate real? Is there a predetermined order of your life before you even get out of the vagina?
I think so, in the sense that much of your life is predetermined by your genetics and where you are born. I think that there's fate in that sense. You're really kind of not changing that, right? Like, you and I are never going to be pro basketball players.
Yeah, listen, we don't usually go down this path very often with, you know, life and things, but it is interesting to think. I don't know if you have everything when you're born. I feel the same way you do, that I think you're born into it, but I don't think you're born with an already predetermined, disposition, I guess.
I kind of think that you are. I kind of think that you're born in a general direction and that maybe you can make some choices that can change that. But I don't think that people, for the most part, are really super responsible for either their success or their failure. That you are always kind of be in that one place, and maybe a twist of fate or a twist of luck got you here or got you there. But for the most part, I think that most of the formative decisions of your life are pretty much all decided by your genetics at birth and your environment at home.
Well, I mean, like us meeting. If I never took the job, if you never took the job, what if we had just stayed in our hometowns? There would have never been Nick and John. Can you imagine that? The world would have been left without us as a team.
There would be at least 5 people who would be disappointed by that.
Everyone who voted for the Signal Awards, there had to have been at least 5 of them.
We didn't get last. I know that we didn't get last, which is a major achievement considering that we're up against like Kevin Hart and the lady from Seinfeld and somebody on Netflix and Jon Stewart. Like when I saw that we didn't get last in voting, I was shocked.
I actually think the last I checked, we were actually tied for second to last. We weren't even like second to last alone.
Oh, so we could have been as high as 3rd from the bottom?
Yeah, technically we were, because there was a podcast below us, and then we were tied with another podcast for, you know, whatever that position you want to call it.
So if out of 6, so we could have been 3rd out of 6. That's not that bad.
Not that bad. Especially how many votes were casted? Like 200,000?
I don't think it was all in our category. I mean...
We're going 200,000.
Okay. All right. Well, then probably anybody who voted for us was probably thinking it was something else, or they were just ironic voting, which we'll take.
Yeah.
I'll take that. Nice big deep sigh out.
Yeah. You got to breathe. You know, I'm learning that as you get older. You got to breathe.
How long do you think you could hold your breath?
Like if I'm trying to like... challenge myself?
Try it right now and I'll time it.
Okay. I mean, well, I gotta get a good breath in, so.
Okay, go. Pinch your nose. No breathing out of your nose. Don't like hurt yourself. Like go until you kind of start to lose your breath. Because we don't have that much time. I've already forgotten. 20 seconds. You held your breath. There's 20 seconds.
Made me laugh. No, I mean, I've challenged myself before just randomly. I've done a minute. I think the most I've ever done is a minute 15 dry. So
wait a minute. How old were you?
This is sometime within the pandemic. I don't remember exactly when, but.
Were you around other people or were you just like one day I'm going to see how long I can hold my breath?
This is such a weird story, man. I don't really want to tell where I was and why I did it.
Why not? What were you doing?
Because it's lame and it's not that great. It's actually kind of pathetic.
Okay, well then go ahead and tell us.
I was laying in bed. and I was trying to fall asleep, and I was like, man, I was like, man, I'll try, I don't know, people count sheep, maybe I'll see, you know, maybe the less oxygen in my brain will cause me to go to sleep, I don't know, so.
You timed it, though?
I did, yeah, yep.
Did you fall asleep afterwards? Did it work?
I mean, I'm guessing, because I, yeah, I mean, I woke up the next morning. I do find it, you know, speaking of that, I do find it interesting that your body is so reactive and smart that it will not let you, you know, choke yourself out or like not breathe. Like it will eventually, your body will force you to breathe.
Yeah. I mean, if you, is that what happened to you?
No. And I think I know where you might be going with this. And no, it was not asphyxiation erotica or whatever that
is. That's not where I was going at all. But apparently you've been down that road before. So no, it's a return trip.
First off, I've actually had this conversation before. And I mean, you better get a big old knot and a very sturdy door frame to hold me up, because I'm taking whatever down. And listen, I'm not making fun of people who have died that way. That's unfortunate. But I'm just saying, as a joke to myself, that it better be a pretty sturdy something or I'm taking the whole wall down.
Yeah, you're not going to do it on a clothes rack. It's got to be like an I-beam.
Fucking clothes rack.
It's got to be it's got to be structural.
I will say this. I did feel a little better about myself just this past week, and we had a birthday party for my oldest daughter. She turned 5, and we had like a huge bounce house, and I got in the bounce house and I could actually bounce in it. So, you know,
man, did you launch somebody?
I did technically, yes, but I more or less threw them because I've learned this. This was our first like big birthday party. We had like 30 kids at my house, and once they get one parent in the bouncy house, that's it. I became the bouncy house parent. So this one little kid, he kept like getting on me. I just chucked him out of it.
You threw a child out of the bounce house?
I did. Don't come into my bounce house, kid. Don't do it.
Yeah. My father has been known to throw children. He's thrown multiple children, which is an odd thing. Not even including me, like other relatives, I've seen him throw them.
Isn't he a doctor, too?
Yeah, I guess he knows they're going to be okay when they land. Right? That'd be all right.
All right, let's give some shout outs here. We'll start with Dwayne Blau.
What if you get there and he's just like, I just don't like your face?
That's the thing with God, though, right? He's supposed to be all-encompassing, you know, it doesn't matter your appearance, just if you lived a good life or not.
Yeah, but what if they're just like, I don't think so.
What if you're like that one poor bastard a day where they're like, we're just gonna say, nope, that guy has an ugly face.
Right, they got a limit for that day, and you're just not quite good enough on that day. Like, you might have made it in on Tuesday, but you're not making it in on Wednesday.
It's a BOGO, 2-for-1 on Thursday.
Right. For right. People with ugly faces. Like, you got to wait. You got to wait your turn. Okay.
All right. Let's see. Dwayne Blau, Ray Gertrude, Mahmoud Khalif, Jao Apollo. All right. Carlo Mantuano, Pedro Cerda, Calvin Shaw, Stella Gibbons. Stella! No,
nothing,
all right, got it.
Nothing from me.
Doesn't surprise me. Seth Thorson and Don Johnson, but not the Don Johnson, I don't think.
Oh, I bet he hates that. Also, not enough Calvins. I could do more with some Calvins in the world. I think there should be a few more Calvins around.
Whatever. We actually have a college here in Michigan, not too far from Metro Detroit, that's named Calvin College. So I get plenty of Calvin.
Okay, but there are people who go named Calvin. Do you know a lot of people named Calvin that go to Calvin?
I know two Calvins, actually.
I don't know any, personally.
Well, I guess that's your problem. All right, so we're going to try something a little different here.
Okay.
I didn't actually come up with a name for this segment because I didn't. I don't know, but we're going to try it out.
Okay.
So... And I'm not really sure what you're going to think of this, so if you hate it, we'll stop. But so I wrote down on my iPhone here like 5 or 6 things that I want to know as an adult. 1, if you can do them, and 2, if you should know how to do them as an adult.
Ooh, okay. All right. Sounds promising so far.
Yeah, we'll see here. All right. So I already know what you're going to say to this. But remember, it's not about you. It's about other adults. So first one here. And once again, I want to know if you can do it, and then if adults should be able to. So first one here, pair wine to a meal.
Oh, I don't think that most people should be able to do that. I think that you should have a basic knowledge as of what is red, what is white, what is whatever. But I don't necessarily think that you should have an in-depth knowledge of what goes with what. I'm perfectly okay with somebody not knowing that.
Can you do it?
No, I don't like the taste of wine. Every time I've ever had wine, it's been disgusting to me. Truly disgusting to me. I can't stand the taste of it. Oh, not man. Like I don't like it. Like, no, I don't want any of that.
Okay. All right. Sober October. You're in full swing, I guess. Stupid
name. Oh, did you wait? Right. Did you wait for a laugh and you didn't get it? Is that what happened?
Well, I was waiting for you to either shit on it or say, like, that's a good joke. But you didn't do either, so.
I just left you completely hanging, and you had nowhere to do, nothing to do. Yeah. Okay.
Listen, if you're doing sober October, good on you. I am not. All right, second one here, be able to change a tire.
Yeah, if you're a guy, you should probably be able to change a tire. It's one of those things that's really actually not very difficult, but you need to be able to change a tire. I would almost argue, like, men, definitely, you should be able to kind of step in that, at least for your reputation. But I think everybody should be able to change a tire. It's something you kind of need to know how to do.
Okay. Can you do it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I actually believe that. And I probably wouldn't have believed it 6 years ago.
No, I have no mechanical ability or any kind of DIY ability, but I can change a tire.
All right, the third one here. Tie a tie.
Yeah, I can do that. But I worked in a career where you had to wear a tie for some part of the day pretty much every day. I don't think that that's essential anymore.
So you don't think adults nowadays should know how to tie a tie?
I think that that's something that you should know how to, just in case. You don't want to be a 45-year-old man coming up and being like, hey, can you help me tie this tie? Like, you need to be able to do that.
All right, number four, brew coffee.
No, I don't even know what that is. What is brew coffee? What does that mean? Like, make your own coffee or just, like, put it in and start it?
Do you know how to operate a coffee machine?
I don't. I don't. Like, coffee to me is like wine. I can't stand the taste of it. So I don't know how to operate a coffee machine at all. If somebody asked me, hey, can you make the coffee? Like, I can't, actually.
Okay. All right. I don't know what to say to that other than there's another person in my life that I asked to make coffee, and they also didn't know how to do it. So it doesn't surprise me.
But do they drink coffee?
Yes. Not regularly, but yes.
Okay, how often do they drink coffee?
Probably once a week. I mean, enough to know how to operate it.
Yeah, if you drink coffee once a week or even once a month, you should know how to make a coffee.
All right.
It's not that hard, right? Like, you take the thing out and you put the thing in and you press start. Like, this isn't rocket science.
I mean, it sounds like you already know how to do it. So there you go.
It doesn't seem like it'd be that difficult. Like, if somebody asked me, hey, we really need you to make the coffee. I'm going to perform surgery on this dying person. Can you make coffee? Like, I'll figure it out.
I think you could. All right. Let's see here. Swim.
Yeah, you need to be able to know how to swim. I think that everybody needs to be able to know how to swim. I know there's some people, I've met a couple adults who didn't know how to swim, but you should be able to do it. And even as an adult, like, I don't understand that concept of that. Like, you're an adult. You couldn't learn how to swim in 5 minutes? Like, move your arms like this. That's the thing. As an adult, haven't you moved your arms in every possible way by the time that you are an adult? Like, what movement of your arms would be so unusual to you as an adult that you wouldn't be able to figure it out? Like, move them in a circle. Like, oh, I've never done that. I've only gone forwards and out. Like, you should be able to teach an adult to swim in 5 minutes.
This warms my heart because I don't know why, but this segment I think is going well. So thank you for that.
I'm upset about the fact that you need to know how to swim. I've always had a huge fear about people around water. I don't like people around water who don't know how to swim. You got to know what you're doing. You don't get a second chance with water.
So you don't. So a sub question, just because I'm curious. At what point do you feel uncomfortable when you're swimming? Is it would you feel comfortable jumping off a boat in the middle of a lake? Is it in the ocean, or are you comfortable wherever you're swimming?
Like, totally comfortable in my ability to swim?
Yeah, like if you were to, I don't know, if, like I said, if you were to jump in the middle of a lake, do you feel confident that you could tread water and swim to, say, a boat or something?
Depends. If the water's not really cold, yeah. That's the other thing. For people who don't know, you don't fuck around with cold water. Because you ever get in like a cold shower or something like that, your body like will immediately take a breath. Like, you know when something's really cold, you get that water on you? Sure. Well, if you jump into cold water, you do that, and then your lungs fill up with water, and then you die. Don't mess with water, man.
All right. Well, I'm going to end it here on something that's a little lighter, I think. Parallel parking.
You should be able to do that. I live in a big city. I live in Seattle, I should say. Seattle is kind of a big city. You need to be able to parallel park. I probably do it 3 times a month. I think that you should be able to do it. I don't think that you necessarily have to be good at it, but you need to understand the concept of it.
Is it more stressful to parallel park or navigate a grocery store parking lot to park?
Oh, well, I would almost rather parallel park on a street than have to, like, kind of squeeze in an underground parking garage. I don't like parking in parking garages because they've made that, like, that's a pretty close fit now.
Yeah, I mean, a decade ago it was close enough. And then if you're a bigger person, you're for sure dinging the car next to you.
Well, cars are getting bigger, bro.
It's not even fair. Not even fair. I think you should be able to parallel park. However, I feel like EVs and, well, not necessarily EVs, but these cars that have these systems that do it for you are going to take that away from the next generation.
Do you think that in the next 50 years we're going to be complete idiots? Because computers will do everything for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I'm as guilty as the next person. I mean, there are some things, I don't remember the last time I had to do real math. Like, I just bust out my phone and I just, oh, what's 20% on this tip, right? Like, I don't think about it.
I don't think it's a problem if people can't do math, but I think that you'd have to learn how to think. That would be the thing that worries me, right? Is like, we're going to start to forget how to think. Like, oh, how do you figure that out? And nobody's used to it if the computer can't answer the question for you.
You could argue that the generation below us, or generations, already don't know how to think. All they do is communicate with their text messages.
I'm okay with that. That's just a different way of communication, right? Like, we didn't write letters. Do you write letters? It's not like grandma and grandpa over here complaining, like, these kids today don't write letters to each other about everything. No, because I can call you.
Maybe I do like to write letters.
That's fine. But don't judge the new generation because they're not writing letters anymore. Adapt to the technology.
It's not what I was saying. It doesn't take anything. It doesn't even matter.
Back in my day, we didn't even have air to breathe. Had to hold your breath for 40 years.
Can we move on before I zap you into a toad or something?
Only if you acknowledge the fact that I just had a good joke. About back in my day, we didn't even have air, had to hold your breath for 40 years. I thought that was pretty good.
It was fine.
It was better than fine. It's like a 6 at least out of 7.
It was good there. It was good. It was a fine good.
Are you ready for our top 5?
Yes.
All right, so our top 5 is top 5 fictional witches. It's your number 5.
Fictional? Are there any actual witches?
Yeah, there have been people throughout history who have claimed to be witches. Whether or not they are, right? It's in the eye of the beholder, but these are purely fictional witches.
All right, my number 5, I'm going to go with Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
I thought about that, but I just don't think of her as a witch.
Have you ever seen the movie?
I have. But that's not my first thought of her as a witch. I just thought she was like an evil person.
Who in the live action movie, who just played her? Christy McCarthy? What's her name? Anyways, she did a fantastic job, and I feel like Ursula is a known witch,
okay,
a known character. So that is why. Melissa McCarthy, that's her name, by the way. Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, I was like, who the hell is that? That makes a lot more sense than now. It's Melissa McCarthy. My number five is Melisandre from Game of Thrones.
Okay, I mean, you know, once again, I don't, as you kind of said about Ursula, I don't think people, it's not that I don't think people don't know she's a witch, I just don't think that she is known outside of that community.
Outside of Game of Thrones, everybody knows about the Red Priestess. I think if you showed a lot of people a picture of her, they'd be like, they might not know the name, because Melisandre is not a name that's easily remembered, but they would be like, oh, I know who that person is. She was a big character in there, a good character. A lot of potential left on the table.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not sure. Not sure about that one.
Okay.
All right, my number four, it's a Homer pick, just because this is the only movie that I remember having a nightmare, because the first time I watched it literally scared the shit out of me, and that is The Blair Witch.
But is that a person? Is that a real? Was the, I'd never seen that movie. Was the witch supposed to be real?
Yeah, I don't know. Watch Blair Witch 2. There's an actual witch in that one, so I presume it was a real witch. Or a fake real witch.
But did they show the witch in The Blair Witch? And then they like, and that's the witch there.
No, because that's the whole aura, is that she was such an entity that you didn't have to see her.
Oh, so your number, that's the concept of The Blair Witch. Even though, is The Blair Witch ever actually shown in any movie? I've never seen him. Like, you can see on screen, like, oh, there's The Blair Witch.
Not in the first one, no. But that's what makes it so fucking creepy, is all this stuff's happening, and you don't know where this little scraggly old lady is.
Yeah, that's too scary for me, man. I don't like those kind of things.
Yeah, well, I had to put it on. I had to put it on. I had to put it on.
My number four is Kiki. From Kiki's Delivery Service. Basically the exact opposite of your Blair Witch with her meanness. It's a nice witch. Good witch.
I don't even know what this is. Kiki's Delivery Service?
Kiki's Delivery Service. Probably one of the greatest movies of all time. It's up there. It's one of the best animated movies of all time. Why would you know about it?
Yeah, I honestly have no idea what you're referring to.
It's a great movie. You should watch it. It's actually great with children, too. It's a happy story about coming of age and learning about who you are as a person and becoming okay with your own talents and your abilities.
Okay, are you done?
Yeah.
My number three, Hermione Granger from Harry Potter.
Okay. I have Hermione as my number two. Hermione Granger is my number two, but I could see her at number three. That would be okay. She's definitely in the top three, I think, because she's the main witch out of all the witches in the Harry Potter series.
I thought there was a for sure like lockup number one and two, so I'm curious to know where you go with one. My number two.
Oh, do I get to say what my number three is, or do you just?
Oh yeah, number three. Sorry, yeah, number three.
My number three is a tie between like all the witch trios: Hocus Pocus, Charmed, whatever any of those other kind of trio of witch shows are. That's about where I'm gonna go ahead and put them. Although I would put the Hocus Pocus witches above the Charmed witches.
Well, those are my number two, the Sanderson sisters.
That's who they are?
Hocus Pocus.
Which one is your number one, though, out of the Sanderson sisters?
I mean, I think you have to go with Bette Midler's character.
You have to go with Bette Midler's character. She is the best witch out of the three of them.
I actually don't even remember the actress that plays the really crazy one at this moment.
Which one's the really crazy one? The one that I know is like Bette Midler would be the number one witch out of that. And then the lady from Sex and the City would be the second one. And then there's the third one that you can't remember who it is.
No, that's, let's see. So it's Winifred, Sarah, and Mary.
Yeah, but who are the actors playing them? Because that means nothing to me.
Jesus. I was hoping that bought me a little bit of time here.
Oh, you were trying to like stall?
I was trying to, but you know. I should have known better. Let's see. So Bette Midler plays Winifred.
Okay.
Sarah Jessica Parker plays Sarah. That's the kind of the crazy one I was talking about. And then Kathy Najimy plays Mary. She's kind of the bigger set one, but yeah. So if you're trying to visualize them, because we apparently don't know what we're talking about.
No, but I would say that Bette Midler steals the show. She's the biggest witch of them. Then it's probably Sarah Jessica Parker and then the other lady.
Do you know probably don't care, but I'm going to tell you anyways. Bette Midler is 77 years old.
I would have thought that she was older than that, to be honest. She's one of those people that's been old the entire time I've ever known who she was.
I don't know about that, but okay.
I can't think of a young Bette Midler. There's some people that, like, they've always been old. Even though they were probably, like, in their 30s when you first heard of them, but they've always been old.
That's a good top five list for another day, I think.
Alan Alda. Leslie Nielsen. Just always been old.
No, he's dead. I think they're both dead,
is
actually.
Is he really? Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. All right, so we have the same number one then, I presume.
I'm going to assume so. Is it the Wicked Witch of the West?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard not to say she's, you know, she'd probably be number one on most people's top five lists, I would think.
I don't think that there's anybody that even comes close to the Wicked Witch of the West.
No, I don't
that
think so
that has to
either.
Be number one.
Though yeah. I do have Glenda the Good Witch on my honorable mention.
Who was the one that got crushed by the house? What was she the witch of? Being I'm crushed not sure. by a house? Being crushed yeah. by houses?
The witch that gets crushed by a house. Let's
okay,
see.
Go in your honorable mention while I look it up.
So I have Alexandra, Jane, and Suki from an underrated movie called Witches of Eastwick.
Never heard of it.
That's a good one. The White Witch from Lion in the Wardrobe. Let's see, going on down the list. Nancy Downs from The Craft. You've never seen it because it's a scary movie.
The Craft is one that I think that I have heard of, but I'm not entirely sure which one that one is. Was she the main one? Was she the friend that was kind of like... the outcast, yeah, and then she became... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and who was the main character of that movie? Alicia Silverstone, right?
Was she?
No, I lied to you. Who was it? Well, Nev Campbell was in that movie, too. Fairuza Balk is the person I'm thinking of. I can't remember who else is in it. Did you? Anyways, okay.
Oh, it was Wicked Witch of the East is the one that got crushed by a house.
Well, she's not coming back. Nicole Kidman, Sandra Bullock from Practical Magic. That's a nice little movie if you're looking for a date night with the wife. And then I have Willow, played by Allison Hannigan from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I don't have any of those people, anybody else really that was mentioned. I mean, you could go down the list with Harry Potter witches, I think. But that's about it, right? Like, you could go with, I can't think of any of their names, right? But there's a lot of Harry Potter witches. But I don't think any of them get in the top five. McGonagall, maybe.
Yeah, but, I mean, once again, like any movie franchise, right? You have the main five characters. And then it's like, do you really know the others? Unless you're a huge supporter? Probably not.
I don't think I generally ever know more than 3 to 5 characters in any movie.
Well, you know, with all the kids' movies you watch, that's really all you need to know, probably.
But even with Avengers, I can't. Like, I can only follow, like, 2 or 3 people. Like, okay, there's too many things going on here. I don't watch a lot of kids' movies. We watch YouTube mountain biking videos now.
Aw, that's cute.
Yeah, it is kind of. I enjoy it. Oh, okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a quick review. We really appreciate it. It really does help out the show. And I want to say a special thank you because we found out right after John and I recorded this that we actually won. We actually won the award for Best Interview Podcast. It's shocking. Like, take that, Kevin Hart, right? I could not believe it. I thought we had absolutely no chance of winning. So I really want to thank everybody who voted. Thank you for taking your time. We really appreciate it. It really does keep the show going. Let us know who you think are the best witches. I think you do have to put the Wicked Witch of the West on as number one. Like, she's the iconic witch. But I wonder if Hermione Granger would actually be number one if it wasn't, like, so spread out. Like, if she was the only witch in that series, if she would have been number one.